Greetings in the name of the one who calls us deeper into life abundant. So 2 days ago, Jazzy and I were taking the dog for our usual walk in the morning. And lately, we also strap the new toddler in our care into a stroller and bring him along too. We were nearly home when our neighbor's three pit bulls got out of a new hole in his rock wall and came charging at us, teeth gnarled aggressively. Our dog, whom Jazzy had on a leash, pulled Jazzy along and away from us. I had the stroller, and I turned it away from the dogs. One of them lunged at my sandaled foot towards the stroller, and I instinctively kicked it in the face. The dogs were back and forth across the road as they kept barking, gnarling their teeth, and coming at us. Seeing this unfold, two separate trucks stopped on both sides of the road to set a barrier between us and the dogs. Out of the bigger truck closest to us comes a local auntie in her big red Dodge Ram 3500 or Ford F-350, rolls down her... Out of the bigger truck closest to us comes a local auntie honking her horn, shouting at the dogs, and yelling at our neighbor to mind his dogs. He never messed with a local auntie. Jesse and I quickly walked further down the road when the local auntie in her big red Dodge Ram 3500 or Ford F-350, I got to the truck part a little too fast, I clearly like trucks, rolls down her window and says, "Hey, you okay?" Adrenaline still rushing, I said, "You came by just at the right time. Thank you so much." Now, for various reasons, I am quick to judge those who drive big trucks. There seems to be this irrational draw to size over practical function and use. More of the bigger is better phenomenon. But in that moment, I can tell you that I wasn't really thinking of this. I wasn't thinking of why this auntie drove a big truck, or of her support or lack of support for electric vehicles, of her stance on abortion, or whom she voted for and why, or whether she voted at all, or of her stance on gay marriage, or her opinion of this odd family walking their timid dog and foster child down the street. I was feeling the vulnerability of protecting a little child and myself, and I was very grateful and moved by the concern and care of those two drivers who saw other people in distress and at risk to themselves stop to help. The auntie saw human beings in need and responded to their humanity. And I think today's gospel lesson is about this, about who we are deep down, and particularly who we are to one another. In the Matthew account today, Jesus takes up the tradition of the commandments. Instead of dismissing them as outdated or irrelevant, he goes to the heart of them. He begins with what his audience may see as a fairly easy commandment to follow: do not murder. But he takes this commandment and goes deeper. In fact, even anger and insult can be as severing of relationship. Reconcile with one another before you practice the outward signs of your faith. Who you are with one another matters as much or more than what you say about each other or the commandments that instruct us in relationship. One commentator on this passage writes, "Perhaps one of the most radical aspects of Jesus' extension of the law here is his internalization of it, so that not only behaviors, but attitudes and emotions fall within its scope." After the commandment not to murder, Jesus is then asked about two hot-button issues of his day, probably ours too, adultery and divorce. And as another commentator on this passage wrote, "However, the topic of divorce was particularly a fraught one in Jesus' time. Two of the leading teachers of Jesus' time, Rabbi Hillel and Rabbi Shammai, were famously divided over the issue of divorce. The school of Hillel favored a more permissive approach to divorce that allowed for divorce, even in the case that a wife ruins her husband's meal. I know. The school of Shammai, however, upheld a much stricter view that only permitted divorce in the most extreme cases. In other words, the conflict over this particular issue was especially heated in Jesus' time. Indeed, the fact that Matthew reports later in his gospel that some Pharisees actually seek out Jesus' opinion on the matter of divorce points to the prevalence and divisiveness of the issue for many among Jesus' earliest audiences. Jesus takes a stance, but one that reminds his audience of the heart of the matter. When considering divorce, it matters how each person treats the other and the support and care available to each person in the relationship. When looking at another person, it is about seeing their belovedness and treating them so. As one commentator notes, although Jesus does seem to side more closely with one school of thought than the other, he ultimately upholds the values of trust and compassion within human community. Perhaps this gospel dialogue would be akin to asking Jesus his opinion on abortion, gay marriage, immigration, critical race theory, or AI. We can say all the right words when discussing race or gender or the moral issues around unborn life and still be racist and sexist and inhumane or not life-giving. There have been so many images this week of those who are risking their lives to unbury people from rubble in Syria and Turkey. There have been seemingly impossible human heroics by those who have fought for their lives or the lives of their loved ones while under concrete and stone. One woman gave birth to her baby while they were both buried. What is it when responding to those in need isn't a commandment, but a kind of impulse? Reaching from the very depths of who we are or by some grace that we cannot comprehend. This is Black History Month, and there have been so many Black and African American authors who have reminded their readers again and again of what happens when we stop seeing each other humanely. At the 1851 Women's Rights Convention in Ohio, Sojourner Truth reminded her audience, "Ain't I a woman too?" At the Memphis sanitation strike before MLK was assassinated, the sanitation workers held signs reading, "I am a man." The novelist and essayist James Baldwin wrote, "Please try to remember that when they believe, that what they believe, as well as what they do and cause you to endure, does not testify to your inferiority, but to their inhumanity." And he also wrote, "Neither love nor terror makes one blind. It is indifference that makes one blind." The gospel lesson this morning is a reminder to all of us of the human across the aisle, on the other side of the commandment, and how we treat them. It is a harder road to walk for sure, one that is simply not about right words or right actions, but about our motives, desires, our tendencies of heart, spirit, and mind. We all fail. Grace keeps us trying. In the end, to what are these commandments calling us? Another commentator asks, not to a checklist of morality, but to a flourishing of life. Not to a baseline of decency, but to an embodied, relational, transformative encounter with all whom we meet. Not to a sufficient set of hurdles for righteousness, but to a path of wholeness with creature and creator alike. And another writes this, God's inbreaking presence in Jesus Christ reorders the relationship of this world and reorients the internal landscape of our lives. During Epiphany, we claim once again that we have a living God incarnate among us, not some far-off potentate who must be humored with occasional acts of obeisance. We proclaim that the Word became flesh and lived among us, the Word embedded in real, everyday life, in outward actions and in inward attitudes. We proclaim a God present in the flesh and bone of our lives, not a keeper of checklists. And this is good news. The God born in a manger enters the messiness of life in all its dimensions, seeking to heal and save. This God offers a life deep and wide, where light shines into every nook and cranny. Not a puny, flat life reduced to avoiding the big sins. Jesus gives the disciples a new way of life, not rejecting the tradition, but building upon it. It is a way of life that demands more and promises more. It is life abundant. Our hymn of the day is in your program.